just gone 3 minutes past seven, and we continue now, and we're going to be doing our pivot point. Pateni Nkuna is our pivot point today, and she is a leader whose career reflects exactly what the segment is all about: navigating change with intention in one of the most competitive professional sectors on the continent. Pateni Nkuna steps into the role of Chief Operating Officer at Cliff Dekker Hofmeyr at a moment when the legal industry is undergoing profound transformation. Today we explored the pivot points that shaped her leadership philosophy, the lessons she's learned in building people-centered systems, and how she's thinking about the next chapter of African legal excellence. A very good evening to you, Pateni. Thank you so much for your time.
Good evening to you and your listeners. Thank you so much for having me.
So I just want to expand a little bit your journey from employment law specialist to director of executive management and now COO. You're basically overseeing operations across South Africa, Kenya, and Namibia. Take me through that.
So I started, my training is as a labor lawyer. I was appointed as a director in the employment law practice going back 2020, and I served in that role until June 2023 when the CEO and I had a conversation. Ironically, I was completing my MBA at the time. And we had a conversation around, well, what's next? Is this something that we can look at? And is this something you're willing to consider? And as they say, the rest is history. It's been such a phenomenal journey working for such a large law firm to start with, and working with exceptional leaders like my CEO and the rest of the partnership, allowing me to bring ideas, allowing me to bring different viewpoints, all in the interest of shaping the business and creating a better environment for our employees, which is one of our most key assets.
That's a hell of a lot that you've managed to achieve. When you look at structural changes needed to advance women in law, what worked and what didn't?
So advancing women in the legal profession requires more than good intentions. So much is expressed when you look at the plethora of legislation we have, particularly in South Africa. There's really been a very proactive attempt at creating environments that are conducive for women, advancing women through structures. But we all know that the true success lies in action and not just intention. Structural changes that matter are really those that address the systematic barriers. We're talking within the space of legal profession, equitable allocation of work, as well as client relationships, parental leave policies that do not penalize career progression. I spoke about my journey from being a director in employment law to moving over to the executive management office of the firm. I had actually come from maternity leave myself, and I found myself in an environment where my career progression wasn't curbed because I chose to be a mother. But in fact, there were systems and policies, and not performative, but truly transformative, and enabling me a level of flexibility to reintegrate into the structures of the firm and to support my growth beyond that. We also speak about general cultural shift in how leadership potential is identified and nurtured. Some of the practical things that I've seen work from my personal experience and in what we've rolled out throughout the firm, and when I speak of the firm across our offices in the continent, is change moving from just beyond informal mentorship to formalized sponsorship programs. Mentorship is still valuable, I believe in that, but it's often passive. It usually focuses on sharing or offering advice, sharing experiences and providing guidance. However, for me, sponsorship is proactive. It means a senior practitioner putting their reputation on the line to advocate for a woman's promotion, to ensure that she is in the room with key clients and as part of important pitches. and to also create opportunities for a woman to lead significant matters. The next thing for me is accountability. When firms track and report on gender representation as well as participation, because it's not just about physical presence, it's also about women actually participating in matters, from simple matters to very complex matters, all the way from candidate attorney to director level. When leadership is held accountable for what they are doing, as well as also being questioned about what they're failing to do, change does happen. Accountability for me also extends beyond just headcount, but looking at what substantive participation looks like. The conversation simply cannot end at just celebrating acquiring a very key or niche client matter. We must further scrutinize and interrogate who is part of the team, and not just merely in the pitch, but in the actual execution. Too often, you find women simply being part of pitches for optics of representation, but only to be excluded when the actual work has to be done. This creates a very wide visibility gap without meaningful exposure to high-value matters, as well as client relationships. Women simply cannot build a track record or gain the expertise and even professional networks, which are very important in our space, required to progress through the various ranks of a law firm. I must also mention transparent promotion criteria, structured feedback processes, as well as demanding trusted business advisors. Firms do need to invest in commercial training as well as secondments and cross-functional exposure, not operating as silos, but having practices within law firms that are able to collaborate effectively and efficiently to ensure greater success. The second gap is leadership development. Often there is this assumption that simply being an excellent lawyer naturally means you'll become an excellent leader. Unfortunately, that is not the case. The assumption is flawed, because just because you're excellent in what you do technically doesn't mean that you can successfully lead a team or a client relationship or even a practice group. Leadership requires a distinct set of skills: emotional intelligence, strategic thinking, people management, as well as the ability to navigate complexity and ambiguity. The skills have to be deliberately cultivated, because unfortunately, most of our training programs did not make room for that. The third gap is technology and innovation literacy. The legal profession has not been spared, like many other sectors or professions. It's being rapidly reshaped by technology, from AI in due diligence and contract analysis to data analytics and litigation strategy. Yet a lot of development programs treat technology almost as a peripheral rather than foundational. Lawyers who cannot meaningfully engage and actually leverage technology are finding themselves falling behind. One last gap that I want to make reference to is diversity of backgrounds. Being able to develop talent from diverse backgrounds. Often the legal sector draws from a very narrow pool of talent, and those who enter from non-traditional backgrounds often struggle, because look at someone from a rural Mpumalanga, for example. They wouldn't necessarily readily have networks or informal support systems available to them. And if a law firm is unable to recognize that gap and actually proactively put in structures and mechanisms in place to support those type of candidates, then we are really pulling from a very narrow pool, and we don't have diversity. We're making impact to a very limited extent without reaching a much wider pool of talent that we can actually harness out there. So those are some of the gaps that I've seen participating in graduate recruitment myself, because of what I do in the firm.
And then when you look at your partnerships in Africa and building an African firm, I mean, you know, using that kind of knowledge and that understanding and understanding the gaps as well. I mean, what are the challenges that you faced in bringing all of these countries together?
At the top of my list would be the friction point in regulatory diversity. Each jurisdiction has its own legal framework governing how our practitioners practice the law, including rules on foreign ownership of law firms. I mean, in as much as we are an African law firm, moving outside of South Africa does present its own dynamics and challenges. Rights of appearance. Just because you've got a law degree doesn't automatically translate into you having the right to represent your clients in a court. Professional regulation, as well as licensing requirements. These regulatory differences do create structural constraints on how deeply offices can be integrated, and it's important at least to do your research and understand how best to navigate those. Secondly, economic disparity. The markets within which we operate vary enormously in size, maturity, as well as profitability. This does create tension around resource allocation, compensation structures, and investment priorities. And a unified firm has to find ways to ensure that all offices feel valued, invested in, while also making very commercially rational decisions about where to deploy resources and when to do so. Cultural differences as well, also another very significant challenge. As you can imagine, our continent is extraordinarily diverse, and the professional cultures, working styles, as well as client expectations vary from country to country. A unified firm has to acknowledge these differences and navigate them with sensitivity, because it's not a case of South Africa telling the rest of the continent how the world runs. You have to have a level of EQ, avoid the trap of imposing a single office's culture. I mean, we locally have offices in Joburg, Cape Town, as well as Stellenbosch, but that doesn't necessarily mean you can so easily or unilaterally impose a Joburg way of doing things in Cape Town. So you have to navigate those sensitivities, the local geographical variances. And whilst maintaining a very coherent structure on standards as well as values, there's also the friction that comes with legacy structures and established ways of working. I mean, we have a continent that has countries that have existed for decades, for centuries, and there are established ways of doing things. When offices have to, when offices that have operated independently come together, there is inevitably some form of resistance, because oftentimes I find that people just seek to understand, but there is often resistance, at least at the initial stages, about whether we can adopt new systems, processes, adjusting reporting lines, embracing shared approaches to business development, as well as client services, how things work. Something may be okay in South Africa, but it's not necessarily appropriate in Nairobi, for example. So being able to negotiate on that and find common ground, because ultimately it's for the greater good of the firm and the clients we service.
Pateni, it was such a pleasure talking to you. You are doing amazing things. You've already accomplished so much, pushing women to the forefront, managing to bring through an African-built firm. Keep trailblazing. Thank you so much for your time this evening.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Pateni Nkuna, Chief Operating Officer, Cliff Decker Hofmeyer. Thank you so much for your time.
TikTok on the street.
TikTok, you don't stop.
On the air. At Kaya on 959.
On TikTok.
Get so much.
We price check 15,000 products every week to make sure we've got the lowest prices so that you can get so much more. Swipe and save on deals like Clover Classic Vanilla Flavored Custard, 1 kg. Buy 2 for 45 Rand. Kellogg's Corn Flakes Cereal, 1 kg for only 76.99. Deals valid until 12 April. Get so much more with the ShopRite price. Only at ShopRite.
Get on the air at Kaya 959.
When you voice note
063-688-0959
on WhatsApp.
But remember,
keep it brief.
Turn down the radio while recording.
Do another take if you're not feeling the first one.
And most of all, have fun
on the street,
on the air. Kaya Biz.
Monday to Thursday,
6 to 8 p.m.
Kaya 959.
959. On the street.